Governor Cuomo has something called his energy highway. We are anticipating a large turnout, and we would love for as many people to come as possible.
So large a turnout that you had to change the venue, apparently, for this meeting.
This group was formed around the start of the year, end of last year, called the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition.
That if you're going to do all of that, the first thing that you need to do is demonstrate to us that it's actually necessary, that there really is no need.
This is Community Power, a monthly series of reports on the governor's energy highway, the popular resistance that it inspired, and the Cultural Resources Survey of Livingston.
Start at the bottom and you pick them from the ground, and you pick that tree clean all the way around. Then you set up your ladder and you climb up high, and you're looking through the leaves at the clear blue sky. Hey ho, makes you feel so fine, looking out across the orchard in the bright sunshine. Hey ho, makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.
Today, the second part of my interview with Haley Carlock of Scenic Hudson and Daniel P. Duthie. And did you participate in the technical conference or at all, or were you just there as an observer? Or,
well, you know, we in the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition really took seriously that the experts should be engaging, yeah, and that lawyers should basically keep their mouths shut, and that's what we did.
Yeah,
it was hard, but we did it.
Well, lawyers are experts in the law, so I'm sorry, Haley.
No, I was just about to say, I totally agree with Dan, and other than our two experts, the only person who did speak at any length was the president of Scenic Hudson, who sort of said a few words at the outset to give some context to the remarks of our experts, but indeed, we did let our experts have the floor, and, you know, their findings really spoke for themselves.
And just to follow up, I think what Ned Sullivan did, which was excellent, was to really focus on the public policies that have been in place for quite some time, and Haley can definitely speak to this better than I can, but the public policies that are designed to protect the Hudson River and the Hudson Valley. And, you know, there's going to be, coming up, a lot of discussion about whether or not these transmission lines can be justified on public policy grounds. Because where we stand right now, virtually everyone who's looked at the data says that there is no justification for reliability purposes. Reliability means, it's a highly technical term, but it means that the lights are going to stay on based upon the system configuration that we have now for the next 10 years. So we've satisfied the reliability criteria that originally comes from the reliability councils. So reliability is not a justification anymore. Okay. The next justification is an economic justification, which translates into a term called congestion costs. So because of the way the system is set up, when you are in a constrained situation, the costs on the downside of the constraint go up because there's less availability of power to flow. And therefore, in this market, this wholesale market, the prices get bid up to the highest demand. And so we now know that over the last 5 years, congestion costs have been steadily declining. Mm-hmm. And we believe that they will continue to show increasing decline to the point where they will truly be almost negligible in terms of the cost in the marketplace to the downstate customers. And so you can't, it seems to us at this point in time, justify an expensive, maybe a $1 billion, $1.3 billion transmission project, as for example proposed by the Transcos, to satisfy a congestion cost that's significantly less than the carrying costs of that $1.3 billion investment. So if the problem, quote unquote, is less expensive than the solution, it seems a very poor business decision to invest in a solution that costs more than the problem itself. Mm-hmm. And so the third way of justifying a transmission line. And this all flows out of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission tariff, which is what has to be followed by the New York Independent System Operator, is a public policy requirement. Let me give you an example. New York State says that it's a public policy to have 30% of our power by a certain date coming from renewable resources. Well, let's say there are wind farms mid to upstate, and the only way they can get downstate to a more lucrative market from their perspective is to justify a transmission line. And then one could argue that that transmission line is being justified on the public policy grounds of trying to meet our renewable state standard goals. So that's where we're at right now, we think, is that the only way that the need for these projects can be justified is on public policy grounds, because they can't be justified on reliability concerns. And it's, you know, we're quite certain at this point, although our consultants have not finalized their report, it's London Economics have not finalized their report, so we're not ready to discuss it yet. But we believe that that report is going to show a continuing decline in congestion costs. So the congestion cost justification is off the table. So what's left is a public policy. And I think where we're at now, and what I think Ned Sullivan did very well, is to throw on the table, you know, there are lots of competing public policies that we need to consider when looking at this. And, you know, the public policy requirement is one, if, as I read the tariff, requires a law, a rule, or a regulation to justify the public policy. And we don't think there's any rule or law or regulation at this point in time. Some other parties believe it can be justified simply by the Public Service Commission having a proceeding and then declaring that it's a public policy requirement. So I think it's a very kind of a squishy issue. It's very hard to quantify. It's kind of like what's in the eye of the beholder. And but we think that the issue is really remaining now is which public policy is going to survive. The public policy to protect the Hudson River and the Hudson Valley, to create a sustainable environment, to enhance another goal. Governor's been big on tourism. It's a fragile economy, but the Hudson Valley is doing well. Agribusiness doing well. We should not be undercutting that bright spot in the New York economy by throwing up ugly transmission lines that are not needed. And we believe that there has been no satisfactory demonstration of need. We were supposed to be addressing need in the first part of this technical conference, but due to a change in the landscape, CPV, which is a power station, got its financing, had not been previously included in the staff model, and they're now back to the drawing board to make sure that that power plant is now included, since it's south of the Central East Upnicini constraint. It has a significant impact, or can have a significant impact, again, on the congestion costs. And so the staff has basically asked for a timeout so that they can go back to the drawing board and remodel the impacts associated with that facility, which did get its financing and looks like it's going to get built.
Gotcha. Now, I don't know if you know whether or not that facility CPV was included in the analysis Guido Neschel did. Do you know?
Let me address that. Guido did a forecast of downstate demand, and we then took a look at the New York Independent System Operator queue, all of the transmission and generating projects that are, you know, waiting in line to be implemented. And we then took a percentage of those projects and said 45%, will, for example, will be successful. We also assumed, and I want to make it clear that HVSEC has taken no position on whether Indian Point should continue or not continue. But for purposes of the discussion, for purposes of the analysis, Guidon assumed that 2,000 megawatts of Indian Point retired. And we still had plenty of resources in the pipeline to satisfy the demand for energy, which at this point is clearly now, we seem to be hitting an inflection point where the demand for power, and I'm going to use the term peak demand in megawatts, is now increasing at a much slower rate. And I think we're shortly going to see the peak demand actually reversing and starting to decline, just like the kilowatt hour sales has declined.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, says we don't have a system that needs to meet increasing demands, whether it's kilowatt hour sales or peak. You know, I guess the best analogy I like to use is you know, you have a beautiful cathedral or temple, and you only use it, you know, one morning a week. So aside from its spiritual value, economically, we have a lot of, you know, wasted time. And that's exactly like we have in our electric system. Mm-hmm. It's designed to meet the peak, and the peak is generally twice the average. So we have 50%, and I'm using round numbers here, we have 50% of the capacity that we are paying for that's in the system that is not producing efficiently. And I think the commission now is addressing this by virtue of the reforming the energy vision proceeding, which started 2 Aprils ago, and which has become quite an inspirational proceeding for a lot of folks who think that we need to get back to more decentralized power closer to the source of the demand.
Yeah.
So microgrids, rooftop solar, things of that nature. And the Public Service Commission is now struggling to figure out how do we change a paradigm which they've been using to regulate the industry for over 100 years, and how do we shift that paradigm into something that's more responsive to the demands of the modern society, to make things more efficient, to bring more customer choice. And it's a major, major undertaking, probably one of the most significant undertakings that I've certainly seen in my career. And it's going to take a while to work out, just like it took a while to get the wholesale market set up in New York and get them working correctly. And they're still improving them constantly. It's always a bit of a work in progress. And the best way I can describe it is the concept behind REV is to try to create a similar wholesale-like marketplace, but at the distribution level, where companies can come in and offer value-added services such as a microgrid and have an opportunity to solve the problem at the same time in a more efficient, cost-effective way.
Tune in next time for the third and final part of my interview with Dan Duthie and Haley Carlock.
Hey, home makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.
Community Power is produced for Wave Farms, WGXC 90.7 FM in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Hey ho, makes you feel so funny when you're walking through a town and you got no money. Hey ho, makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree. Hey ho, well you feel so down, picking up windfalls, crawling on the ground. Hey ho, makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree. Hey ho, well you lose your mind if you sing this song about 100 times. Hey ho, makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.